And I'm Christopher Purdy. Good morning. Happy holidays to you all. I'm delighted to welcome you to today's edition, our holiday edition of All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose. Cassie is WOSU's book critic and the proprietress of thelongestchapter.com, which is her blog. And Kevin Griffith is professor of creative writing at Capital University and a poet and an impresario bringing writers to the Central Ohio area. Welcome to you both.
It's good to be here.
Here's what we're going to do for at least part of today. We expect Bill Eichenberger at some point. He's probably in his car listening to us on the radio, tearing his hair out. But we are going to talk about, yes, it's that time of year again, for the best books of 2011. We're going to ask our panelists, our guests, for their opinions. And then we want to know from you what you thought was great in 2011 or not so great, or what you're reading now. So, Cassie Rose, talk about the year of books of 2011.
Well, thinking back on it yesterday, I was trying to come up with, was there a landmark book? And everything that my memories kept bringing up were from 2010, and I thought, was I asleep this year, or did we not really have a book like The Help that came out, in 2010, I believe that was 2010, or a major event like Salinger passing away? Or I was thinking, Tinkers, the small press book that won the Pulitzer. Well, that was 2010 also, and I thought, so was there not a landmark book or something that really, shook the literary community? I don't know, but one didn't come to mind for me. So, I thought some of the award nominees for the National Book Award this year were very good. For example, The Sojourn by Andrew Krivok is one of my very favorite books from the year. It takes place in the Italian front of World War I and told from a very distinctive viewpoint of two cousins who are snipers and who became that because they were shepherds and learned how to, in protecting the sheep when they were young from the mountain lions, had become sharpshooters. A very, very involving book and a very interesting perspective on World War I, out by Bellevue Literary Press, and it was nominated for the National Book Award. So I would say that was one of the outstanding books of 2011.
Tell me the title and author again.
It's called The Sojourn by Andrew Krivok.
Was it a first novel for him? Is he somebody you knew about?
I did not know him. He did write a book about becoming pursuing the role of a Jesuit, which he did not fulfill. But he wrote about that journey, and I'm forgetting about the name of that book, but I did write about it on The Longest Chapter, because after I had read The Sojourn, I went looking for his work, and that was the book I found. So I want to say this might be his debut novel.
We'll check the archive at The Longest Chapter, too,
yes,
so you
yeah.
can find Cassie's posting on that. Kevin, how about you? Do you have any first election for the best of 2011 or
yes,
most notable?
I would agree with Cassie in some extents. I heard a lot. I read best of lists, and a lot of the reviewers were saying, 2011 was a particularly good year for fiction, and I didn't agree with that at all.
I
thought it was
either.
A lot of sort of also-rans in 2011, but if I were to pick something, it would have to be The Pale King, David Foster Wallace's posthumously published novel, an amazing feat of editing work. It was sort of culled together from various manuscripts he had started while he was still alive in the early 2000s, and put together in the form of the novel called The Pale King. We know that David Foster Wallace wrote Infinite Jest. That's probably his greatest work. We studied that in a class I taught at Capital last semester.
Tell me about it.
Infinite Jest is, it's considered like the Mount Everest of contemporary fiction. Mm-hmm. Anyone who is interested in fiction should climb that mountain, and it is a mountain. It's over 1,000 pages long. Incredibly complicated book. It has over 120 pages of footnotes in the book. A lot of people don't like that. A lot of people say, it raises the question, can a book be too reader unfriendly? And I would recommend, it's not a pretentious book, and Infinite Jest, I believe people should read it and stick with it. It is a little off-putting when you start it, and a lot of my students didn't want to finish it, that's for sure, but I think they were glad they invested the time in it. And one of the big themes in Infinite Jest is Wallace is grappling with that big question: what does it mean to be human, and how do we survive as humans? How do we get through the day as humans? And there's a lot of talk in Infinite Jest about self-sacrifice, about trying to move into a post-irony stage in fiction. That's what Wallace was all about. And I think he was beginning to try to answer those questions in The Pale King. The Pale King, he decided in The Pale King to pick the most boring thing you could ever write about, and that is working for the IRS. He actually went and worked for the IRS for a year. And the main theme, if I can read just one sentence from the book, I think the main theme of The Pale King can be summed up here. He says late in the book, "It is the key to modern life. If you are immune to boredom, there is literally nothing you cannot accomplish." And it's about making heroes of people who just do the dullest things we could imagine, but do it every day and sacrifice sort of their, you know, joie de vivre, as it were, in the sake of doing something for the greater society. And I think that's really interesting. So I would recommend David Foster Wallace's The Pale King. He's worth your time. He's not a under the covers, lose yourself in a book type of guy. That's for sure. Yeah, he's work, but he's worth it. So The Pale King would be my vote as best of 2011, but there weren't many challengers, I thought.
Well, when you say that about David Foster Wallace, what adds weight to that, all that you have said, is that he took his own life. So he was actually struggling with a lot of those questions himself and obviously working them out in his literature.
Yeah, there was another book that was published in 2011 called All Things Shining. How do we and it was about it was about David Foster Wallace, and it was about, can you really, because Wallace really doubted there was a God, and so All Things Shining is saying, well, that was one of the reasons that led to him, you know, ultimately killing himself, because he felt that you could put yourself in a solipsistic vacuum, just live in the now, and that's the way we should survive, and it didn't work for him. And so I don't know about that claim. We don't need to get in details here, but Foster Wallace had a long battle with depression. He was attempting to get off of his medication, and that probably led to his suicide, not any philosophical meltdown or anything like that.
Well, do you think Infinite Jest is best read with instruction, in other words, in an academic setting?
Like Ulysses.
Yes, like Ulysses, sure.
Yeah, a lot of people say it's really close to Ulysses. What we did was really good in the class. We read Infinite Jest, and each student had to keep a blog, and they could comment on each other's blog. So it was kind of a group effort. It was a good thing to do. And the other thing is, you know, I told him it's like this massive pile of blocks. You know, it's not a linear narrative. You have to approach it that way, and you just pull what you can from it and make what you can from the novel. It's not meant to be read as a beginning to end, you know, reach the climax, then denouement type of work. So, and The Pale King is the same way, and I'd strongly recommend The Pale King. And David Foster Wallace is very readable. He is not pretentious. He's not a pretentious writer. He's not overly complicated in his style. He's readable once you just let your assumptions go and move through the book. So The Pale King would be my choice.
When I began our program this morning, I referenced the best of 2011 lists. What's up with these lists? I mean, you know, they have the best underwear of 2011. I mean, anything has a best of list. But I do grab them, and I do gravitate to them, and I do pay attention to them, and I'm supposed to know better, and I don't care. I mean, tell me about these lists. Are these the vehicles to sell books? Are they the publishers? Is there money exchanged? How's this working?
I think it's probably akin to writing your monthly report in the business world or the annual report or something. Because I'm curious about them too. I go all over the map and look at, you know, all the lists online, who is listing this and that. And then, of course, everybody, you know, Twitters their books. I mean, it's in one way, it probably is to get the books to sell more. And they also, I think, function like the bestseller list, because readers don't know what to choose. So they will go to the list that people are recommending. But my question is always, is how can you claim that it's the best unless you have read absolutely every book?
Yes.
Now, I think that favorite works, but the best, I don't trust that.
No, it would be hard to do. And I also don't trust the, there's a lot of anthologies that come out every year too, like the best of the American short stories, the best poetry.
Essays,
and amazingly,
sports.
It always ends up being the people whose names would come to mind without even thinking. Oh, guess what? Joyce Carol Oates is in it again, you know?
But here's something that's timely in a sad way. Christopher Hitchens' selection of essays, Arguably, which I devoured, frankly, because he's a poster boy for me, who he passed away last week after a long illness, and he's on the list for nonfiction. The only other name I recognized is Stephen King, whose new novel 11/22/63 is very much talked about, and you know, he's you know, signs his name on paper and it becomes a bestseller and then a movie, but it's gotten quite the imprimatur. This 1,000-page novel about a terrible and fateful day in our history. Any familiarity with that?
I've not read it.
It got very good reviews, and it looks good. And I think it'll have strong sales. I think it's going to be a big big presence for people. So, yeah, I would think that's good.
Well, I went to another list, and I found a book on it, a new novel by Ann Beattie called Mrs. Nixon. It's a novel.
And it was listed as a best?
Somewhere, yeah, somewhere. I'm not in the New York Times, but it was pounded. I was seeing it referenced everywhere, so I went and got it from the Whetstone Library. And I think I made it to page 6 and said, life's too short. And I just put it down. I mean, it was just these streams of consciousness that had nothing to do with the topic at hand. So,
Well, I don't understand.
Call me crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why she did that anyway. But I was surprised because Kakutani, and I think it was the weekly New York Times, she slammed it. I mean, she was vicious.
Michiko Kakutani
is the critic for the New York Times. I mean, the Pulitzer Prize-winning critic, the landmark critic, and boy, did she go after Ann Beattie on this. Oh, she slammed the book. She slammed the reason for writing it. It was, and right from the get-go.
Really? Well, I didn't know that, but I might send her a Christmas card, Michiko Kakutani, because I kind of had
She nailed it, huh?
I have to agree with that. That wouldn't be on the top of my list anymore. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend for Books with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We want to know what you are reading over the holidays. What's the best book you read in 2011? You can call us at 292-8513. You can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. We want to know what you loved. I just told you what I hated, but I only got to page 6. What you loved in 2011, it doesn't necessarily have to be published in that year. What did you love, Cassie Rose? Give me one book you loved that you read in the past year, whether or not it was published in 2011.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have to say that it's a book that I actually read in the last month, maybe 2 months. And it's a collection of 14 stories called This Road Will Take Us Closer to the Moon by Linda McCullough Moore. And it's by a very small press. And I was captivated by this narrator, a woman named Margaret, who is very reflective but also wisecracking. And she looks back on her life. And so the first story is from her childhood in the 1950s. The last story is about her sister trying to keep her in an assisted care facility. Her viewpoint on herself, her family, it's just so engaging. And there's nothing, it's not about a dysfunctional family. It's all very ordinary. For example, one of...
Hold that thought. We're going to take a break for 60 seconds. I got us going a little too quickly.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And we'll be back in 60 seconds. All Sides Weekend. Don't go away.
This is Peter Sagal. 2011 was already a tough year, but it just got worse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is going to be on TV. It's our 2011 Year in Review show on the BBC America cable channel Friday, December 23rd at 8, 7 Central, and then you can hear it on the radio at its usual time this weekend. Viewer advisory, please allow about 5 minutes of extra viewing to get used to what I look like.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. 34 degrees with cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. Expect some light rain, maybe a few snow flurries, and flat temperatures right around the mid-30s throughout the day. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 27 degrees. Clouds tomorrow morning, then clear skies by the afternoon, and a high of 40 degrees. Clear skies tomorrow night, a low of 28, and then on Christmas Day, partly cloudy and a high of 42. All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, our producer, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy. All Sides Weekend is talking about books today with Kevin Griffith from Capital University and WOSU's book critic, Cassie Rose, who I interrupted midstream. So finish your thought about, first of all, give me the title again of this collection of short stories you were talking about.
It's called This Road Will Take Us Closer to the Moon, and it's by Linda McCullough Moore, which is probably not a book that you're going to find in Barnes & Noble, at least in stock. You would have to order it online because the press is called Levelers Press. And I'm not quite sure how I discovered this book, but it is so incredibly beautifully written, and I loved the narrator. I couldn't stop thinking about her as if she were a real person. And it's a lot of how she was looking at her life and how she was commenting on herself, whether she's on a date with someone she met online or whether it's her family that is celebrating Thanksgiving, which that short story is the one where the title comes from. And it's just a typical holiday celebration with a family that, you know, they're on their way and they stop to see a great old aunt at a nursing home before they have Thanksgiving dinner, and they stop at the cemetery to see all the family gravestones, and one of the nephews is taking pictures of the gravestones, only he's doing pictures of the McIntosh family when their family is McKenzie, so he's got the whole family name wrong, you know, and then they go to this visit the aunt and someone asks the piano player to play Hava Nagila and everybody starts dancing, even the mention of that song, the whole premise of this book is about, you know, let us be glad and rejoice. And in all of her life, that's really what she comes to. And again, this is fiction, but it's really a book I would recommend that if you like short stories, if you like a character, because she's the narrator or the protagonist in all of them, you like bonding with the protagonist and you like this whole nostalgia, wisecracking, looking back on a life and enjoying life kind of stories, this is a very good book.
We have a lot of calls coming in, so I want to thank people for calling. 292-8513 is the number for your favorites or not so favorites of 2011. And do be patient, and maybe also if you could be brief, because we have a lot of people waiting. Abby has been waiting. Abby from Columbus. Hello, Abby.
Hi. I was just calling to tell you my favorite book. I'm reading it right now. It's called 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a contemporary Japanese writer. Just wonderful. I've read all of his other things, and they're kind of metaphysical, mind-buster, fictional works, but they're wonderful. And if you've read it, maybe you can give your concise little pitch about it, but it's a great book.
Thank you so much, Abby. We're going to have a discussion about that now, because both of my guests were nodding and smiling in recognition when you said that. How about it?
He's great.
Q84, yes.
Murakami translated. He's famous for translating all of Raymond Carver's works into mm-hmm. Japanese. And my favorite work by him is, Abby's probably read it, is After the Quake. He did an excellent collection of short stories about 10 years ago. Just fantastic stories. Incredibly inventive writer. I'd strongly recommend reading him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would recommend him too, although he's one of those writers that I know that I need to read more of. And I was nodding because this book is one that is on my reading table and I need to get to it.
Getting a lot of attention now. Mm-hmm. I thank you, Abby. And Mary is on the phone from Westerville with her recommendation. Hi, Mary.
Yes, hi. I have two, both nonfiction. One is Reckless Endangerment by Gretchen Morgenson and Josh Rosner. They've written something that a Luddite, financial Luddite stand. And the other one is Ron Chernow's George Washington. It was a fabulous book.
That was fabulous. I'm with you, Mary. Yes, that was a great book. Thank you so much for the recommendations.
You bet.
So if you have late holiday shopping yet to do, you can listen to our program. You probably, if you're ordering online, will make New Year's gifts, but that's okay too.
They don't have next day delivery for online.
Yeah, 292-8513 is the number to call us with your recommendations of favorite books of 2011 or not so favorite. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org or look for us as well on Facebook. Chris is on the phone from Granville with a recommendation. Hi.
Yes, there's a book by a fellow by the name of Christopher Schwartz called The Anarchist Tool Chest. And it's a strange name, but basically it's a book on traditional woodworking and why you really only need 47 hand tools to do anything that you ever wanted to do. And he goes into great depth about each of the tools and why they're important. And he's one of the leading people driving the renaissance of hand tools for woodworking in America. It's a fantastic read. He talks a fair amount about what's wrong with woodworking in America now, and you know, trying to support a lot of the small producers of extremely high quality hand tools. Really a great guy.
It sounds great. It sounds like I can think of three or four people in my life I need to buy that for. So thank you, Chris, for the recommendation.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that very much. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. We're talking about books with Kevin Griffith and Cassie Rose, and your calls at 292-8513. Kevin, let's talk about another of your recommendations or comments for books in 2011.
Well, I wanted to go with Cassie was talking about the very strong narrative voice in The Road Will Take Us Closer to the Moon, and I just love it when this happens. You just get completely surprised. And I picked up a young adult novel. It's a novel written for the 9 to 12 year old set called St. Louis Armstrong Beach by Brenda Woods. It's, again, St. Louis Armstrong Beach, and it's an incredibly well-written book. I read it and then I gave it to my daughter. She read it twice, and it's about Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. It's about a boy who plays jazz clarinet in the French Quarter, and it's incredible narrative drive. It's narrated through his voice, and it's about 4 days before Katrina is supposed to hit, and so there's this ominous, you know, foreshadowing throughout the book. Turns out that his mother refuses to leave New Orleans because she works at a hospital, so that adds a lot of tension to it. They make him leave with some cousins, but then he gets out of the car and runs back to try to find his dog who was left behind in New Orleans, and ends up with this diabetic neighbor in the attic and has to like try to get her medication from the flood waters below. Fascinating book. Incredibly strong narrative voice, good reading. It's not a child's book in
the
sense
writer?
It was written. It's called Brenda Woods. She's a Coretta Scott King Honor winner. Never heard of her before, but St. Louis Armstrong Beach, fantastic little novel. I'd strongly recommend it if you're an adult as well.
I'm delighted that for the recommendation. I'm curious how you found this book.
I think I saw a recommendation somewhere online for this as being a good book for the 9 to 12-year-old set. But I would strongly recommend it if you're an adult, too, and you're looking for a really engaging book to read. I mean, just the tension in it was just really believable.
I have found more and more that I'm drawn to reading young adult literature. There are some really terrific books that are coming out, and more adults are reading them too. And in fact, there are two books that I am giving to adults this Christmas that are young adult literature.
Weren't the Games books?
The Hunger Games
geared for young adults. I mean, they were a little hard to swallow, but they were very popular as well. There are three of them, I believe.
It's a trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there was another. There was a young adult book that I read this year called Jasper Jones by Craig Sylvie. Now, in Australia, though, which is where the author is Australian, it was published as an adult novel there. But here in the United States, it came out as young adult, and I don't think it got as much play, probably because of that. But a terrific novel from the viewpoint of kids that are probably in that, you know, 9 to 12, and there's a murder that they're trying to solve, and it's in the 1960s, and very compelling, very colorful and rich. And I think something about the young adult novels is there's, and I read this somewhere, because I think it was in the New York Times, it was an essay about how as an adult reading them, you are free of the adult issues. Mm-hmm. And because so many of our books that we're reading, you know, we're caught up in the adult issues of, I don't know, of life and the philosophy and all this. And in the young adult novels, you're not. There's a greater freedom, a greater release. And that's why I'm drawn to them. It's the reading experience is different.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was great, and it's what's great about St. Louis Armstrong Beach as well is it is young adult, but it's good that it's refreshing for once. It's not about a dystopian future, post-apocalyptic future. It's right here, you know, it's a history here. So.
We watched it on TV, sadly enough, years ago, yes.
Mm-hmm.
292-8513. We've had some nice calls. We have more on the way. Please let us know what you're reading now, your holiday reading, what you liked or didn't like in the year 2011. Our email address, you can use that as well as allsides@wosu.org. Time for Cassie to give us another recommendation.
Well, I was just going to add one more thought about the young adult. One of the books that I'm giving to an adult this year is The Phantom Tollbooth.
Oh, wow.
Which
that's terrific, yes.
It's the 50th anniversary this year. They have 50th anniversary books out. But it's, you know, this wonderful, you know, a kid is bored. He's bored out of his mind. And so he gets in a little car and drives through this fake toll booth. And the next thing you know, He's in this land of Dictionopolis, and he's working with a dog named Tuck, who has an alarm clock that he has to, in him, that he has to keep winding up. Again, just another encouragement to go for the young adult.
Yeah, don't be
books.
Put off. That's right. Yeah. Yes, don't be put off.
For I can recommend for an adult book, something that I just finished, which is really outstanding. It's called Assumption by Percival Everett. He's written many books, but this was the he was a discovery for me. And it's a crime novel, and it's a trilogy in that there are three crimes within it that the one deputy sheriff Ogden Walker solves. It's intriguing because the protagonist is sort of a Columbo kind of a guy, lives in a trailer. He's a little, you know, kind of off. He's got a bonsai plant. He can't seem to keep alive. A dog. he's very deadpan in his humor. Laugh out loud lines that he shares with his fellow policemen. The thing about it, though, is that if you are the kind of person that likes things neatly tied up, you won't like this book because it's very satisfying, though, because you don't see for the three crimes, you don't see it coming. The last one, though, and all the crimes are murders. The last one, I got to the end and it was the end of the book and I was furious. I thought I had been tricked. I thought he was using me. I thought I knew I wanted to talk about it on the air. I thought I can't talk about it now on the air. I don't like this book. And then I realized maybe I missed it. Maybe I missed the clues. So I went back and indeed I had. I hadn't gotten it. And the brilliant part of this, the title of the book is Assumption. It's because the first two, having read them, I made assumptions about the deputy sheriff in the third one, and it threw me off. So if you're looking for that kind of pay attention, you will love the characters. Takes place in small town New Mexico. You know, it's a fictional town outside Santa Fe. Very, very smart, very intelligent.
We have some emails that came in. Aaron on Facebook, in fact, found us on Facebook. He said he really enjoyed Robocopolip.
Robocopolip.
Say it. You do it, Professor.
Robocopolip.
Yes, by Daniel H. Wilson. It's about a robot servants who become self-aware and decide they need to change who is running things. The book is full of wit and really fun to read. Do you know it?
I have not read it, but I know that got a lot of buzz during the year. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Aaron, for that. And Sam is reading The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes.
That's
I have
a good
halfway
book.
Done with this. Can't wait until the day after Christmas so I can finish the book in peace. We had a lady last month wanted Thanksgiving over with pronto so she could finish The Man in the Rockefeller Suit. I'm with her, by the way. Yeah. This book has gotten a lot of buzz, this Julian Barnes book, The Sense of Ending.
It did. Well, it won the Man Booker Prize. But what's interesting, though, is in, I think it was last Sunday's Sunday New York Times, is Jeff Dyer just went after it. And he basically ripped it apart
in
an essay.
What's with the New York Times these days?
I don't know. Which surprised me because, and I had a conversation with someone else who had read the book. They loved it. It won the Man Booker. It got high. I read it and thought it was really, really well done. Small, about 160 pages, about a man who is, in so many ways, you could say he's misremembering his past from his 20s. In other words, the message that, you know, we develop as we grow older, our memories become certain. We're certain that that's what happened. And when there's an event that happens and he receives an inheritance that makes him look back on something that happened in his 20s and he's realized he is not remembering it correctly when he hears from other people. It's very well done. It teaches us to say that, you know, you think you know, but you don't. It's probably along the lines of the theme that Percival Everett had in this book, Assumption. We make assumptions about what we think is happening and how it can get us into trouble.
Especially if we don't pay attention or we don't get it the first time.
Right. Then you don't get the book.
We have a call from John in Columbus who has a recommendation for us. Hi, John.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
Recently read an amazing collection of short stories called Brave New Worlds, and it's this collection of dystopian future stories ranging all over the place in style. And just every single story I read, I was enthralled with it and couldn't wait to get through it. And then I get into the next one, and it was the same thing all over again.
It's a collection called Brave New World. It's edited by John Joseph Adams. Is that right?
That's correct.
That sounds like a good gift item, too, for people. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, John, for the recommendation.
No problem.
I was just thinking as well, when you were talking about books for young people that everyone loves, I don't care. You can laugh if you want, but one of my favorites is The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham, you know, because I am the toad, just so you know. I am the toad driving that car. Anne is on the phone from Clintonville with a recommendation. Hello, Anne.
That's cute.
I am, aren't I? No, go ahead.
I'm going to put in a word for nonfiction again on a book called Red. I actually picked it up about 5 years ago in Boston. And didn't get to read it until after I'd read another book called Mauve. And both of these are about the origins of color and color as it came to Europe's recognition. And Red has to do with the discovery of cochineal in what is now southern Mexico, Oaxaca. And it is just a fascinating story of how it took over Europe and the rage for it and how it was the cause for wars and battles and, a lot of historical things that we may look at from another point of view, but that actually were based on the economic, and the rage for this color, scarlet color, red, that could dye anything and was permanent. And it's just a very good read. You know, it has a certain feeling of a novel, because as they go looking for it and trying to figure out what it is and where it comes from, because it was quite protected by the local people, how it was made, how it came, how it was created. Quite an interesting story.
Interesting. An easy title to remember, Red, and the author is Amy Butler Greenfield.
Correct.
And Anne, I thank you very much for waiting in for your call. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're going to take a break for 90 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. Cassie Rose is my guest, and Kevin Griffith as well. And we will be back shortly. Don't go away.
Daryl Scott is a country songwriter and performer who grew up playing with his father, Wayne. Daryl became pretty famous, but Wayne never got further than playing the local bars until the age of 71, when Daryl produced his father's first album. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to their performance together, and we talk with Daryl about how his father died a few weeks ago in a car accident. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the year in politics, John Kasich's first year as governor, and OSU football's bowl ban, those topics and more. Tune in for Columbus on the Record. It's tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. And remember, you can always watch full episodes of the show online at WOSU.org/COTR.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting Fiddler on the Roof. The national touring Broadway production makes its way to the McCoy Center stage on Thursday, January 26th. Tickets and more details at mccoycenter.org.
34 degrees with cloudy skies, steady temperatures in the mid-30s today. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 27 degrees. Clouds tomorrow morning, clearing skies by the afternoon, a high of 40. All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We're talking about books on the last 20 minutes of the last show of 2011. So let's hear from you all as well about what you read in 2011 you especially liked or not. 292-8513, all sides at WOSU.org. Who wants to go next with a favorite, Kevin?
Sure. Well, we've been talking about all these lists, the best of 2011. I found this was interesting. I actually tried. You cannot find a list of the best books of poetry for 2011, might tell you something.
You're going to have to do this.
Yeah, that's right. So that's right. So I said, what the heck? I'll come up with my own list.
Good.
Or at least my own top pick. And there were some good books of poetry in 2011. One that comes to mind is Franz Reit's Kinder Tottenwald, mm-hmm. which I have here and I talked about in a past show. Franz Reit, always a good poet and a good bet. But the one I picked for the best of the year is one that came out of nowhere. I just saw it on the new bookshelf at the library and decided to pick it up. It's called Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Derby by Andrea Cohen. And it comes from a Press Salmon poetry out of Ireland. She's an American poet, but she published her book in Ireland. And I'm beginning to get a sense from doing a lot of reading that the British and the Irish, they know what they're doing when it comes to poetry. You can usually trust
them.
Yes,
they do.
This is a wonderful book of poetry. It's one of those books where you can open it at any page at random and read just a really great, engaging poem, a poem that's plain spoken but resonates. Has that what Keats would call negative capability to it, but it's not way out there. I would like to read just one very short poem from the book. It's called, again, Kentucky Derby by Andrea Cohen. This poem's called Elegy for the Nail. So you get hammered going in. You get bent. Forget about it. Forget your princely carriage when first forged. So you lived a little. So you hold two pieces of a tired door in place, or better, the scent of my secret love sweater.
Oh, my.
I thought that was really nicely done.
That's terrific.
Very well done. Good sense of music throughout without being, without being pushy about the music. A wonderful collection, Kentucky Derby by Andrea Cohen. Best book of poetry for 2011 for anyone who's interested in that.
Well, and your comment about the Brits and the Irish, you know, knowing or having a different take on poetry. There was once last year, maybe twice, they had two awards, pretty big awards, and that was for fiction. I mean, the poets were competing with the fiction, and poets won. And it was even a surprise in those areas. And one of the books I went and got was just totally taken with it. So the mere fact that their poetry books can compete equally with their novels says a lot in their awards.
We have, pardon me, that cold isn't going away. We have a call from Julie in Granville with a recommendation. Hi, Julie.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to recommend Let's Take the Long Way Home by Gail Caldwell. It's a wonderful memoir of a friendship between two women writers.
Really?
I've heard of that book, yeah.
What drew you to it, Julie?
You know, I saw it recommended somewhere. I've forgotten where now. But it was my favorite book of the year and a favorite of lots of friends of mine who've also read it.
Well, thank you so much. Let's Take the Long Way Home by Gail Caldwell. Julie, thank you for the recommendation. Our number is 292-8513. That's a 614 area code. You could also send us email at allsides@wosu.org, and you can find us as well on Facebook, All Sides. And Cassie Rose, what do you have for us next?
One of my favorite books that I read in the since we had the last show is by a classic author, Brian Moore. It looks like his name is Brian Moore, but he's Irish, so it's Brian Moore. And it's called The Mangan Inheritance. It's M-A-N-G-A-N, so I don't know if it's Mangan or Mangan. And it's a very involving story and a traditionally written story, and which we've been sort of touching on, this quality of where it's well-developed characters, a well-developed setting, a rich plot, where it has the intrigue, it has the arc, and beautifully written. And also, you know, he captivated me in terms of the story because I didn't know what was going on. That starts out with a divorce between the protagonist or his wife, who is a very famous actress, is leaving him. And his whole identity has been caught up in her. And he is a kind of a hack journalist and was a wannabe poet many years ago, and he gave all that up. And he, in his sorrow, or trying to deal with the divorce that has been sprung on him, he goes home to Montreal and finds a daguerreotype of a poet named James Clarence Mangan, who is actually a real poet who died in 1849, an Irish poet. And he looks exactly like him. So he goes in search of him, his ancestry in Ireland. Now, in that description, and even on the back of the book, you think, oh, this is going to be dry. Because I sort of thought that. And it's published by the New York Review of Books Classics, but it is anything but, because he gets with these relatives who are living in a trailer outside of this big house that they lost, and they're, you know, Irish drinkers, and then he lusts after an 18-year-old, you know, cousin, and then there's this mystery of an uncle whom he also looks exactly like, and so people in the small town outside of Shannon are turning and looking at him and doing a double take. It's wonderfully written. You love the characters, and you can really have compassion for this protagonist who is really kind of lost with his identity and trying to find it again and what he discovers about himself. And there's also this deep message in there about what happens to us when we fail to be the caretaker of our calling. So that's, I know that sounds kind of deep.
Give us the title again.
But it's very good. Yeah. It's called The Mangan Inheritance by Brian Moore.
Brian Moore, another Irish writer. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of emails I just want to reference, and we have some people waiting on the phone. Dan found us on Facebook, and he also enjoyed The Anarchist Tool Chest by Chris Schwartz, who is an Ohio author, which I don't think we knew that from before. Joey sent us an email. Speaking of young adults books for adults, Lev Grossman's The Magicians and its sequel, The Magician King. It's a mix between Harry Potter and the Narnia series. The difference is that it's set in the very real world with young adults with real problems. Amazing books, The Magicians and The Magician King by Lev Grossman. And Cindy sent us an email. She liked The Confidence Men. It's about the Obama administration, not in a favorable light. But more importantly, subtitle suggests it's about the financial system and the government. So that's something that's always timely, whether for good or bad reasons. I thank you all for the recommendations. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffin. Our phone number is 292-8513. All Sides email is allsides@wosu.org. Jim is on the phone from Powell. Hi there, Jim. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just certainly not a book for everyone, but in honor of Christopher Hitchens' passing, I went back and read Am Reading God Is Not Great. Certainly one for anyone who is struggling with their religious identity.
He is somebody with a lot of strong opinions that he backed up. I myself am a big fan, but yes, you're right. God Is Not Great. It probably isn't for everybody, but I read it, and it was certainly notable.
Yes.
Jim, thank you so much for the recommendation.
Thank you.
Again, we're talking about the favorite books or most infamous books we read in 2011. We don't care all that much about the best of lists, even though I came in this morning dependent on one of them. I got that slapped down pretty fast by my panelists. We've had some wonderful, we've had books for young people that adults like. We've had poetry. We've had a couple of very timely novels. I'm going to ask each of you for one more good recommendation while we wait for a few more calls. 292-8513. Kevin.
Well, we've been talking about excellent short story collections here, and this was, I love it when this happens. There's a well-established, apparently very famous author you've just never heard of or never encountered, and his collection of short stories, his first collection of short stories just came out this year. It's called The Outlaw Album by Daniel Woodrill. And Daniel Woodrill is probably most famous for his novel Winter's Bone, which was made into a movie, which was nominated for 4 Academy Awards a few years back. I had never heard of it. Winter's Bone is an outstanding novel, a little novel about a teenage girl who has to go out and look for her father, who's basically off of parole. He's bucked parole, and now she has to go out and bring him home. The Outlaw Album is probably the best collection of short stories I've read since Ray Pollock's Knock 'Em Stiff, set in the Ozarks. Brilliantly, brilliantly written. The sense of conflict in these, how he sets a tone really quickly in his short stories. One short story called Black Steps begins with a husband and wife waking up, and there's a naked man standing at the end of the bed growling at them. And for some reason, because the husband needed a late night snack, he has a plate with some cheese and a knife next to his bed, and just he ends up killing the guy, and then that's just like the first page of the story. And then it goes on from them to become a really human story about how that The guy standing there was an Iraq War veteran. He had mental problems. He goes to meet his parents. It's incredible stories that never let you go. And it's just so wonderful to encounter a writer you haven't heard of. And I'm going back and reading all of his stuff now, Daniel Woodrell, and this is called The Outlaw Album.
I'm writing that down, too, as you said that, because you spoke so compellingly about that at Winter Bones. So I'm glad to hear that. We have a lot of people, as always happens happily with us, stacked up on the phone. So let's get to Laura from Westerville with her recommendation. Hello, Laura.
Hello. I am almost finished with The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration by Isabel Wilkerson. And this is published in 2010. And won the Pulitzer Prize. It's a nonfiction book really discussing our country's history that I don't think most of us are familiar with, the millions and millions of African Americans who migrated from the South during Jim Crow time to the North for work. And it's absolutely fascinating, reads like historical fiction, but is nonfiction.
The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson.
Yes, I read that President Obama was reading it on his vacation in August.
Okay, then.
So I picked it up.
Well, next time we'll call him up and ask how he liked it. Laura, thank you so much for the recommendation. I appreciate that. We have Debbie from Columbus. She has a recommendation. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to recommend Mennonite in a Little Black Dress. I'm not sure what but I don't remember what the author's name is, but it's a really good book, and kind of you wonder what it's all about from the title, but it's about a woman who is going through some personal hardships with divorce and bankruptcy and physical problems, having been in an accident, and goes back to live with her parents, who are Mennonites, and they it just explores that religion, which I really knew nothing about before this, and it's just really interesting, and her interest in, or her struggle with whether she wants to get back into that religion or not. So it's a very good book.
You have to hand it to her for a title, don't you? A Mennonite in a Little Black Dress.
Yeah.
Debbie, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Another vote for a recently deceased author from Mark from Columbus. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Well, this is actually for his brother. His brother, a professing Christian, wrote a book called The Rage Against God.
Oh, it's by Christopher Hitchens' brother.
Yeah.
Right, that's right.
A fascinating book. And by the way, the Winter's Bone, they may know that there's a movie. It was a great movie, too, made on that book.
Yeah, we mentioned that. None of us have seen it, so I think we're all going to go to the library and get online and try to find that out. Mark, thank you so much for the recommendation and the call. We appreciate it.
All right.
Calls are stacking up. We can ask that you be concise and brief and take our good wishes for the holidays in advance so we don't have to do that. We have Roque from Columbus. Let me just make sure I have – there you are. No, sorry there. Call back. I always hit the wrong button. But in the last minute, we have 15 calls stacked up. My apologies for that. 292-8513. Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith are both laughing at me, and that's fine. You – brought with you the man in the Rockefeller suit,
yes.
Which we had, a woman raved about that last November, and we all went out and read it and was very glad she called.
Oh, yeah. If you're looking for pure creepy entertainment, the man in the Rockefeller suit, probably definitely my vote for the best nonfiction book of the year, The Man in the Rockefeller Suit by Mark Seale. You wouldn't believe what people will do if you just say your last name's Rockefeller and have pretense of being blue-blooded or connected to royalty. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy was unbelievable how far he was able to get in our financial system and the stock market. The man in the Rockefeller suit. It's an amazing story. You read it, Christopher.
I did. I couldn't put it down. Yeah. It's nonfiction. You remember reading about this guy in the news 2 or 3 years ago who passed himself off as a member of the Rockefeller, and everybody bought it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, and nobody questioned him. Everybody just bought it. And he rode this puppy until for a long time. He's in jail now, but, When it was good, it was very good. We have John from Columbus on the line. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to recommend this quasi-science fiction comedy novel called Time on My Hands by Peter Delacourt. A very funny book. A story of a travel writer who's a Princeton graduate who in Paris bumps into a quantum physicist who feels that Ronald Reagan is the single biggest evil of the 20th century, and thus, you know,
I shouldn't laugh.
Basically, gets the guy to go back into 1937 and to try to at least derail Ronald Reagan's career. Well, the guy goes back, you know, he knows all about cinema, so he's able to, if you will, write what they would think would be great, you know, screenplays, gets a job at Warner Brothers, quickly makes friends with Reagan. I won't give the rest of the book away, but trust me, it is, if you're at all interested in film, I'm not terribly thrilled with the time travel genre, but this book is a gem.
It sounds like it's very entertaining.
So I wish you the best of seasons and happy holidays.
John, thank you very much. Now, Rogue from Columbus called back. Thank you very much. I'm sorry about what happened. Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
I am calling about a book called Maze Runner. It's a very good book. It is about a kid that his memory was wiped and he was just dumped in the middle of a village that is just smack dab in the middle of a huge maze, and that the people in the village have been trying to get out of the maze for 2 years, and yes, it's just an amazing book, and yeah.
Maze Runner. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That sounds great. Thank you for the recommendation and the call. Thanks for calling. We have an email from Paul, and I'm with you, Paul. He says, well, how about A Christmas Carol by Dickens or Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn? Mm-hmm. He says they seem to be out of favor today. I don't agree with that necessarily, but I'm glad, you know, it's great to be reminded of old friends. And Gary wants to know, Cassie, the author of the Australian book you were talking about again?
Jasper Jones by Craig Sylvie.
Craig Sylvie. Okay, thank you very much for that. We have time for one more call from Barbara from Columbus because she's been waiting. Barbara, go ahead.
Thanks. Am I on? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. The name of the book is Polio, An American Story, The Crusade That Mobilized the Nation Against the 20th Century's Most Feared Disease by David Oshinsky, and it was a 2006 Pulitzer winner in history, and it's just a fantastic read. It just really, you think it would be boring, but it's not. It's totally engrossing.
Okay, Polio, An American Story.
Correct.
Barbara,
yeah.
Thank you very much, Barbara, for the recommendation. We're down to our last 90 seconds, so it's time enough to wish you all happy holidays and to thank Kevin Griffith for being with us today, professor of creative writing and poetry at Capital University, who always brings in a stack of the best books. If these people tell you it's good, it's good. Read it. And if you don't like it, call it and yell at them because that makes for even better radio. And Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic with her blog, The Longest Chapter. What's your last post, latest post?
It's about The Conference of the Birds by Peter Siss.
Okay, we have give us one title to remember as we sign off, Kevin.
The best book of the year, in my opinion, The Hungover Cookbook. I'm telling you, get it for your friends for New Year's Day. Milton Crawford's The Hungover Cookbook, Recipes for Hangovers.
And Cassie Rose.
Well, I'm going to tell people to look for The Conference of the Birds by Peter Siss.
Okay.
It's a beautifully illustrated book with a great story.
Thank you for that. Happy holidays to you both. Thank you all for listening. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.